several months ago, and I didn't exactly check the date, but I think it was about August, maybe it was September, when we covered the subject of health and nutrition. So I'll say it was 3 or 4 months ago, and I'm not sure, but I know it was warm. And I said that I would come back with one or two Bible studies, if you will, not really a Bible study per se, but you know what I mean. And I would cover the subject, pick up, and tie up some loose ends after those two sermons set the stage. Now, normally what I would do is give a sermon, or if there was a three parts or two parts, I would give the next part, the next two parts, or even three parts, if it's a four-part sermon, right after each other, and it'd be a little easier. Breaking off for several months and coming back, it's a little bit awkward. There may be a little bit of overlap, but primarily my purpose this time was always to read through a number of different things, kind of setting the stage for wrap-up. And I have some points at the end I'll wrap up with, about 6 points. But I wanted to lead in by just looking at the front page of today's paper. It's perfect in a way, and it isn't all about nutrition. The reality of our time is a horrible, horrible disease is coming. Prophecy is being fulfilled. God has never changed. What he said was going to happen is happening, and it's right on time. Men change. God says, I change not. Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. What Mr. Armstrong thought was coming is now coming. I look at the headlines, for instance, and I think, was it about 4 or 5 days ago, 3 days ago, that there was a terrible earthquake in California? $100 million damage just in the downtown of this 100-year-old city with a century-old look. Basically destroyed the city. Only 2 people died. Not so good in Iran, where 5,000 were killed instantly yesterday, as it says here. Devastating quake kills at least 5,000, injures 30,000, and nobody even knows how many are missing. U.S., Europe promised to send aid. Now, what they can't do is resurrect 5,000 people. Iranian city crumbles. All right, Christ said earthquakes would come. Only a foolish person would say they're not accelerating. Mudslides in California kill at least 7, 9 or more missing. But rescuers still hopeful they'll find survivors. Well, they'll find the survivors, but they'll find that not everybody survived. Again, of the 9 missing, probably all of them died. Just a tragedy. A rock slide in Yosemite yesterday, if many of you heard about it, injured a number of people, and I don't know if it killed any, but it landed on a building. 4 U.S. soldiers killed as insurgents retaliate, as I mentioned in the sermon, against coalition-friendly Iraqis and kill a tribal leader. And in an impossible situation, as long as Saddam's alive, I would imagine there'll be people who think that there'll be another jailbreak. How many of you know that Saddam came to power because he was in jail and they broke him out of jail? Okay, a few of you know that. How many of you did not know that? Guess what they think they can do again? They got to figure out where he is, and they're just going to be another jailbreak, which is one reason why I understand the president says it's probably best if, you know, you put him to death. And I remember they asked Rumsfeld, would it have been better if you just killed him? And, you know, it was messy for a day or two with the boys, Uday and Kusay, but then it's over, and, people, why didn't you save them? Well, because of what you're going to see with Saddam when they saved him. And it's going to be a messy situation. His capture apparently didn't slow anything down. It may have actually fired people up. He's a living martyr. Nelson Mandela got out of prison to, you know, fight another day, so to speak. Now he's a renowned world leader. Remember, a lot of people thought Hitler was a hero. He wasn't, but there were many who thought he was. There were 1 million card-carrying Nazis in Germany. Most people were not Nazis in Germany. That's an interesting fact. But the other fact is there are 1 million people who thought he was wonderful. Minimum. Of course, far more than that. Now, Musharraf, the general who's the president of Pakistan, survived his second assassination attempt in 2 weeks Thursday. and astonishing story. And the world continues to turn toward a horrific, almost nonstop level of violence I've just never seen before. Violence is defining life on planet Earth. You go back to Noah's day, Christ said it would be like that, and it says that the earth was filled with violence. Well, today, when the whole world is a little global community, I mean, the whole world is a village, in a sense. There's so much interconnection that the synergism and the build-off and play-off and spin-off of what happens generates the next and the next and the next event. You know, six Air France flights to the United States. One was supposed to stop through Cincinnati, got canceled because we thought there were certain dangerous people on those flights. Next day, we're back up and running. But until that, you know, that time, of course, we're in an orange alert now, I believe, in an orange alert in the next second to highest. Red's the highest because the chatter is very great that the Al-Qaeda is going to steal some cargo jets and fly them into dams. And what happens if that? The devastation is astonishing. There's no dam in the world that is strong enough to take a cargo jet flying at 550 miles an hour and weighing how many tons? You know, 550 mile an hour bullet, the biggest bullet in the world. These things are flying elephants. All it takes is one. And think of the calamity from one great river just letting go. I mean, there are people on planet Earth now who sit in rooms like this plotting how to murder the most people, just knowing as they do it, they are pleasing God. Now, here's the problem, and I'll define it. And this leads us to the last article at the bottom of the page. When I was a sophomore at Ambassador College, I went out to open the fence, the shipping and receiving department, which was right adjacent to the campus across the railroad tracks, and opened a gate. And when I did, I noticed a spider. And I thought, well, look at that. And I thought, is that a black widow? I knew they were out there, and I'd never seen them before. And so sure enough, it was a black widow. And, you see the red violin. Have you ever seen a black widow? A red violin on the bottom of it? Okay. It's not a violin. It's just a mark. A brown recluse is shaped like a violin. Black widow has a little bright red violin, otherwise it's black. So I went in and got another guy, and this fella came out and captured her in a jar. And lo and behold, she was pregnant, which means by then there was some poor widower who died. What they do is a black widow impregnates her, and then she eats the guy who did it. That's why she's a widow. Okay, just in case you didn't know that, just filling you in. Well, of course, this is interesting. Wow, we're going to see all these little baby black widows born. And we put her in this gallon jar, put some leaves in there and different things. And, you know, she spun a web and we watched her. And I'd come to work and each day and, you know, she was growing greater and greater with children. And then they were all born. And itsy-bitsy spiders, hundreds of them. And they were all through in there. And, you know, one guy pulled him over, and he was looking over to the edge of the big shelf she was on, and, you know, concrete floor, you know the rest. Oh, he knocked it over, and hundreds of little black widow spiders were running all over the floor. All right. I mean, you never saw five adults run around fast as we could, just stamping on these black widows as fast as we could kill them. They're going in under this. Get them, because we're going to have to work there, you know. And you're reaching all different places. I mean, it was a tap dance. Gregory Hines couldn't put his feet up and down faster than we were doing this. And we think we got them all. We didn't hear later of any employees who died, you know. But I've never forgotten that story because it reminds me. I mean, it's a funny thing to see, but think of what was at stake. And it reminds me of what it's like to deal with these insurgents in Iraq and all over the rest of the world, these cells. These are black widows all over, and we're trying to just stamp them out. And you can't get them all. You can't get them. Afghanistan is blowing up in Iraq's rearview mirror, And Pakistan is of course, where Musharraf is, and what's happening there is well known. And, of course, all over the world, just all over the world. Now, the bottom of the newspaper, this is just all in a day's business, what we're talking about here, is an article that describes shock in this country, fear, one mad cow in Washington has been found, one Holstein slaughtered. They, of course, where did it come from? They confirmed in Britain that it is bovine spongiform or whatever, it's a long term. And of course, it can kill people. It killed some people in Britain. Agriculture officials unable to find sick Holstein's birth herd, possibly infected beef. The article is entitled, Origin of Mad Cow Case May Never Be Known. Federal agriculture officials said Friday there's a chance they may never know where the Holstein infected with mad cow disease contracted its illness, something experts said could shake the confidence of beef eaters. Well, $27 billion business in this country every year. You know, this is a beef-eating society, and one cow in one place slammed the market about, what was it, Tuesday or something like that. So far, none of the meat from the animal slaughtered, along with the infected cow on December 9th at a slaughterhouse in Washington, has been located. It sort of, I guess, describes the nature of what we face. There'll be diseases coming from here and there. You know, 29 died of Ebola, an outbreak the other day. I think I talked about it in a sermon. All kinds of problems that are affecting various parts of the world. Christ said there would be pestilences. Now, we found that even God's people don't believe most of what God said. Or some of what they said, and a lot of what we thought were God's people don't believe any of what he said is probably a better way to put it. When Christ said that there would be, single word, pestilences, he was not kidding. Now, first I thought, before we get into some serious stuff here, I would have a little fun with you. And I meant to read this in the sermons, but I'm going to do it right now, because we're going to talk about some pretty heavy things here. But this is a food spoilage table, it's called. Finally, a way to know what to pitch and what to save. Any of you women ever pile things up in your refrigerator? All right. When my mother died, it was my job to go out and clean out her freezer in the garage. Now, I started to clean it out, and I could only go about 6 inches down. Below that, the depth of this thing, it was solid ice. Solid ice. And she'd throw stuff in there, And then just it would freeze, and she'd just keep throwing stuff on top, and by the time she died, it was almost a solid block of ice. And so I started chipping through it, and first I got to the Mesozoic era, then the Paleolithic era, you know, and then dead Neanderthals and whatever else was down in there. I would stand in the garage, this is summertime, July, in North Carolina, swinging an axe in a garage and trying. And, of course, the axe couldn't get the angle. And I couldn't, using a chisel and so forth. So my mother, whose nickname was Pack Rat, even before she married my father, after she married my father, you know, it was even my nickname because, I came later, obviously. But my mother kept everything. So... And then in her refrigerator, you just have to ask my wife what looking into my mother's refrigerator was like. She was a gourmet cook, couldn't bear to throw away anything, ever. Anyway, the gag test. Anything that makes you gag is spoiled, except for leftover from what you cooked for yourself last night. Eggs. When something starts pecking its way out of the shell, the egg is probably past its prime. Milk is spoiled when it starts to look like yogurt. Yogurt is spoiled when it starts to look like cottage cheese. Cottage cheese is spoiled when it starts to look like regular cheese. Regular cheese is nothing but spoiled milk anyway and can't get any more spoiled than it is already. Mayonnaise, if it makes you violently ill after you eat it, the mayonnaise is spoiled. Wow, that's a depth of wisdom there. Frozen foods that become an integral part of the defrosting problem in your refrigerator compartment will probably be spoiled or wrecked anyway by the time you pry them out with a kitchen knife or an axe. Expiration dates. This is not a marketing ploy to encourage you to throw away perfectly good food so that you'll spend more on groceries. Perhaps you'd benefit by having a calendar in your kitchen for spoilage. You know, they put preservatives in there, and it's incredible how long stuff will last. Meat. If opening the refrigerator door causes stray animals from a 3-block radius to congregate outside your house, the meat is spoiled. Bread, sesame seeds, and poppy seeds are the only officially acceptable spots that should be seen on the surface of any loaf of bread. Fuzzy and hairy-looking white or green growth areas are a good indication that your bread has turned into a pharmaceutical laboratory experiment. Lettuce, bib lettuce, is spoiled when you can't get it off the bottom of the vegetable crisper without Comet. Okay. Canned goods. Any canned goods that have become the size or shape of a softball should be disposed of carefully, it says. Carrots. A carrot that you can tie a clove hitch in is not fresh. Very flexible carrots. Okay. Raisins. Raisins should not be harder than your teeth. Potatoes. Fresh potatoes do not have roots, branches, or dense leafy undergrowth. Okay. Chip dip. If you can take it out of its container and bounce it on the floor, it has gone bad. Empty containers. Putting empty containers back into the refrigerator is an old trick, but it only works if you have a wife or a maid. I understand that. Okay, unmarked items. Generally speaking, Tupperware containers should not burp when you open them. Okay. General rule of thumb, most food cannot be kept longer than the average lifespan of a hamster. Keep a hamster in your refrigerator to gauge this. Yeah, I thought you'd enjoy that. All right. Interesting article, a shocking article was emailed to me by one of the staff overnight. Scientists begin measuring pollution in human bodies. Incredible, but true story. This fellow is a biotechnology writer, and I guess there's a website here if you want to look up more of this. But out of San Francisco, Davis Baltz shops for organic food and otherwise tries to live as healthy as he can. So he was shocked to learn that the pollutants collecting inside his body sounded much like a Superfund cleanup site. Pesticides, flame retardants, and other nasty man-made chemicals turned up in a recent test. Quote, what that told me is that no matter what I tried to do, the plumes of chemicals that we are passing in and out of every day give us exposure, said Baltz, who works for Commonweal, an environmental group in Bolinas. For decades, researchers have sampled the air, land, and sea to measure pollution from power plants, factories, and automobiles. Now, in a process called biomonitoring, scientists are sampling urine, blood, and mother's milk to catalog the pollutants accumulating in humans. They call the results body burden. Commonweal and the Washington-based working group funded, well, anyway. All right. Now, though the tests are yielding scary lists of contaminants found in the body, their links to disease are less clear. Nonetheless, proponents say such testing will help researchers learn what role the environment plays in causing disease and how to treat it. Many chemicals, such as PCB and DDT, both banned decades ago, remain in the environment for years and build up in the body over a lifetime. Somebody was telling me, by the way, that before services, that there are some people who die with so many toxins in their body, they cannot be buried in a cemetery. They have to be buried in a biohazard waste dump. That's incredible. He was reading an article. I wish I had that article. That's an amazing statement. Now, I had to read the following book at Ambassador College. It's interesting. I've not seen this book or been written 41 years ago. It's not a new phenomenon. Rachel Carson wrote about the poisons in her 1962 book, Silent Spring. Did any of you ever read that book? Fascinating book. Which is widely credited for jumpstarting the environmental movement. But until now, researchers were left mostly to guess exactly how much and how many of the toxins lingered in our bodies. Few of the estimated 75,000 chemicals found in the United States have been tested for their health effects, this fellow says. Several studies have been completed. In March, California researchers reported that San Francisco area women have 3 to 10 times as much chemical flame retardant in their breast tissue as European or Japanese women. Astonishing. Indiana University researchers reported at the same time that levels in Indiana and California women and infants were 20 times higher than those in Sweden and Norway, which recently banned flame retardant. The CDC, Center for Disease Control and Prevention, earlier this year released data from 2,500 volunteers tested for 116 pollutants and found such chemicals as mercury, uranium, and cotinine, a broken down form from nicotine, in their bodies. The CDC also reported that Mexican-American children were found to have 3 times the amount of chemical derived from DDT compared with other children. Scientists suspect that Mexico and Latin American countries may still be using the banned chemical. Now, all of this stuff goes into the body and reduces the immune system. I just wonder if God could look down the tunnel of time, know what mankind would do to the surface of the earth, to his air, food, and water, and realize this would play an enormous role in depleting the immune systems of millions and billions of human beings. I just wonder, opening the door for all of these invasive diseases that have always been there to enter. There's still a debate among advocates over which of the 75,000 chemicals to look for when biomonitoring. And anyway, it goes on and just talks about more of the same. How many of you are familiar with NutraSweet? Okay, I won't ask if you eat NutraSweet because you'd be embarrassed after you hear what I'm going to say here. Aspartame, marketed as NutraSweet, Equal and Spoonful, I guess they have different names for it, has caused an epidemic of multiple sclerosis and systemic lupus. It's interesting. I wish I could go through all of this. But when the temperature of aspartame exceeds 86 degrees Fahrenheit, the wood alcohol in it converts to formaldehyde. That's what you put dead stuff in to pickle it. And then to formic acid, which in turn causes metabolic acidosis. Now, formic acid is the poison found in the sting of fire ants. The methanol toxicity mimics multiple sclerosis. Thus, people were being diagnosed with having multiple sclerosis in error. Okay, now I'm just going to spot through. The multiple sclerosis is not a death sentence, where methanol toxicity is. In the case of systemic lupus, we're finding it has become almost as rampant as MS, especially Diet Coke and Pepsi, Diet Pepsi drinkers. With this toxicity, the victims usually drink 3 to 4 12-ounce cans of them per day, and many people a lot more than that. Some even more, of course. In the cases of systemic lupus, which is triggered by aspartame, the victim doesn't know that the aspartame is the culprit. And it continues its use, aggravating the lupus to such a degree that sometimes it becomes life-threatening. When we get people off the aspartame, those with this lupus usually they lose all their symptoms. Unfortunately, we cannot reverse this disease. Okay, now, it goes on and talks about how it can cause fibromyalgia, spasms, shooting pains, numbness in the legs, cramps, vertigo, dizziness, headaches, tinnitus, joint pain, depression, anxiety attacks, slurred speech, blurred vision, or memory loss. All are related to NutraSweet. But they don't say that, of course. They're even finding that a growing number of women, because a lot of women drink this diet stuff, and it's now been linked to the onset of Alzheimer's disease, a growing number of women in their 30s are coming into doctor's offices saying memory loss, and the doctors are telling these women, you have Alzheimer's in their 30s. Skipping on down, it causes manic depression, depletes serotonin in the brain, which causes these feelings of anxiety and depression and manic depression, panic attacks, rage, violence, is because a lot of people are taking this stuff and it's affecting the chemicals in the brain, and the brains are just, putting it shortly, they go wild. Of course, NutraSweet is eaten in basically 90 countries in the world. Okay, let me just pick up here. We told a mother who had a child on NutraSweet to get off the product. The child was having grand mal seizures every day. They're finding that epileptic seizures, petite and grand mal seizures, are directly related to NutraSweet. The mother called her physician, who said, no, don't take the child off of that. And so she doesn't know what to do. Does she go with what the doctor said? We are still trying to convince the mother that the aspartame is causing the seizures. If the baby dies, you know whose fault it is and what we're up against. There are 92 documented symptoms of aspartame from coma to death. The majority of them are all neurological, and, you know, aspartame basically destroys your nerves. It just destroys your nerve. They'll go into the brain and start there, and they found that people with brain tumors, when they go in and they pull out brain tumors, cut them out. A lot of people have surgery, open the head, cut them out. They've noticed that often brain tumors are just full of NutraSweet. It's amazing. But people don't know this stuff unless they explore it. If it says sugar-free on the label, do not even think about it, unless it's aspartame-free as well. Fascinating. Here's an article about ADD, attention deficit disorder, and ADHD, attention deficit hyperactive disorder. Of course, most of the stuff that you read about this is this particular author, and the plain dealer says is just psychobabble. But ultimately what's happening is they're shooting kids full of drugs. These all kinds of drugs for these kids. Ritalin is just one of them. Are these drugs safe? This guy writes here in the Plain Dealer. Not on your life. The risks to children are enormous. The short-term side effects, and there's hundreds of thousands of children who are so wired up on chemicals that they say, well, the only way to treat them is just give them a drug. Parents, I can't deal with my kids, so just calm them. And so they give them these drugs, but here are the side effects. Increased heart rate, irritable stomach, increased blood pressure, insomnia, mood swings. These drugs will often decrease the amount of growth hormone that the body is producing that is readily available to cause the person to grow. So they're finding now we've got a whole generation of kids whose growth stunted because they've taken this stuff. It's to stunt their brains, but it's stunting their bodies. Oops, that wasn't good. And so it's astonishing. It's astonishing what it does. I mean, the article goes on and talks about how Ritalin, for example, affects the body like cocaine. Oh, maybe we shouldn't be giving kids cocaine. Well, fascinating article. Okay, now, here's another one. The Wall Street Journal, front page, headlines. Diet drugs teens use often in huge doses are almost an epidemic. A girl died in the 90s. I don't have the date on this, but a cheerleader for the Little Cyclones, a swimmer and a gymnast, Noelle Smith, was popular at Ames High School in Ames, Iowa. You know, middle America. And she seemed well-adjusted, but she thought she was fat. Now, this is an absolute epidemic, what we're going to describe here. To get ready for a Christmas dance during her junior year, Noelle lost 5 pounds. After a mediocre report card a few weeks later, the youngster, weighing 120 pounds, standing 5'3", told her parents she was going on a diet. At first, she refused to eat anything but half a piece of toast a day. That's not going to get it done. Later, she began devouring over-the-counter diet pills as well as laxatives and diuretics. Eventually, she was taking as many as 10 boxes of appetite suppressants a week. Although Noelle tried to hide her habit, her parents occasionally would find empty boxes of diet pills such as Dexatrim and Accutrim in her pockets. In July, she died of heart failure. She was 20 years old. Well, there's anorexics and bulimia, and it's a strange thing. In a world cut off from God, people like Karen Carpenter can be told by her husband, who I believe was a doctor, if I'm not mistaken, and there are others who are married to doctors, you are killing yourself, and you cannot get through to the mind that, and the mind changes that they look in the mirror and they see they're terribly fat, like this 5'10", 58-pound woman. Have you seen her on television? They're doing a study of how they're trying to save her life. They're bringing her back. She looked worse than the creatures that walked out of Auschwitz. And she would look in the mirror, and they're interviewing her, trying to learn as much as they can before they either, you know, pull her back or she dies. And she knows that they may not save her. Her heart just may give out. But I've seen pictures of it. It's the most hideous thing. She's just her legs are the shape of her femurs. It looks like her femurs with a few veins in there, and then come to the bulge, which is the knee, and then here comes the tibia and the fibula, and skinny, just bones down to the feet. And they have to stand her up, and she looks in the mirror and says, "Oh, I'm still too fat." And they sit her back down. If I hadn't seen it, I wouldn't believe it. So there's so many different kinds of unbalanced, odd, weird things going on out there. Now, here's a fascinating article entitled, "Doubts Often Plague Doctors." Here's a quote. "We don't know what we're doing in medicine," said Dr. David Eddy, who testified in front of a Senate committee back in the 90s. "It's imperative that we fix that problem." What? Imperative we fix the problem. We don't know what we're doing. I guess that is pretty imperative. If lawyers all stood up and said, "We don't know what we're doing." Accountants all said, "We don't know what we're doing." Atomic scientists working with devices that could explode at any minute. "We don't know what we're doing." Think what that would mean. Doctors, and the whole article goes through on how there are no protocols. There's no way to diagnose disease. I wish I had time to just walk you through. "For common illnesses and medical conditions, the necessary assessments to establish correct theory have never been done." I don't know if you ever read the book, Dr. Robert Mendelsohn, who's dead now, "The Confessions of a Medical Heretic." And then Further Confessions, I think he had a second book. He had been an MD, and he pulled out. He just said, "Doctors haven't a clue what they're doing. I'm ashamed of my profession, and here's my confession." And he admitted, in effect, what you see here by this Dr. Eddy, quote, "We're really flying blind on an awful lot of important problems. The same patient can go to different physicians, be told different things, and receive different care." And they go through and they have a whole series of charts here on how doctors treat the most basic conditions differently, because they've never been taught a standardized way of diagnosing. Now, I don't agree with the doctor, fix the problem, because you understand what we feel about doctors. They're not all bad. They can do certain things that are good. But the long and the short of it is, people are trusting guys who are in increasing numbers saying, "We do not know what we're doing. When we tell you we are practicing medicine on you, believe it." And some of us aren't very good, and we're not getting in enough practice. You know, the worst thing, I guess, would be a doctor who's new. He hasn't even practiced practicing. And so, when they say he opened a practice, practice is what you do before a game, if it's any other sport. With the doctor, the practice is the game. Do you understand? We open a practice. "Come one, come all, I want to practice on you. And when I mess up, I'll say, then I'll learn." And, of course, in a world cut off from God, God's people had better understand this. Now, I said this in the sermons not long ago on the subject of nutrition. Terrible, terrible times are coming. So awful, so unbelievable that you can hardly comprehend it even when it's explained to you. But most of God's people never study conditions that are so bad that it says women will eat their own children and the afterbirth. We shouldn't talk about that. Well, God does. God says things are coming that are so horrible, it's unbelievable. We were talking at the lunch there, the dinner, about Dr. Lynn Torrance, who was on the Bataan Death March. He sat in the hold of a ship. Now, Bataan Death March is one of the most famous war events in the world. Oliver North has done his war stories on it. Dr. Torrance was a minister in the Worldwide Church of God. I knew him. He came into Global, and I got to know him a little bit better. He was primarily down in Big Sandy. But he was thrown into a hold of a ship. Mr. Turk heard his sermon, and he was thundering at young people to wake up. Obey God, come out of this world. Let me tell you about real life. And then he told about the death march. And he told me these stories, and they were repeating them. I'd heard them. But they took American prisoners and put them in the hold of a ship as tight as Jews were put into cattle cars and sent to Poland. So tight you could not fall down. You couldn't lay down or sit down. That's how tight you were in the hold of the ships. Now, the Japanese would look down and they would throw rotten vegetables down into the hold of the ship after they would leave everybody real hungry. Now, I mean, you know, the tribulation's real. Just get this in your head. This happened. And they would throw all of these rotten vegetables down when everybody's hungry, and they just grab them and eat them, and they knew that it would give them diarrhea, dysentery. And they would vomit. So all these guys who couldn't lay down, they would be standing there. They would start vomiting and having diarrhea. And then the ship would go back and forth and this stuff. And here is this minister of God, who I believe was a converted man. He did get out of the apostasy and was a fine man, telling the story of this stuff sloshing in their feet. And then men would just die where they stood. And they'd just move with the group. And they'd just stand. They couldn't fall. And then they'd begin to rot. I mean, it's look, ooh, that's harsh. When God says, you know, we sing about it, by the waters of Babylon, there we wept and there sat down, hung our harps on a willow. It talks about, and they dashed our little ones' heads on a rock. You know, those horrible things are coming. I mean, disease is real. Mr. Armstrong used to thunder, lift up his voice like a trumpet, and warn people. Let me tell you, brethren, it's not going to be pleasant. What is coming is awful, and a lot of our people eat the same kind of junk as their counterparts. Look, if you're already taking in the flame retardants, you're already eating all the hormone-laced beef, which has caused a 1,500% increase in the last few years in just prostate cancer. It's unbelievable what you're already taking in, even if you're being careful. If you're not being careful, why... I guess just stop and realize. Just stop. What chance does your body have? Do you know 40% of all the vegetables consumed by children in America today, 40% are ready? French fries. That's it. It was potatoes. But it's not really potatoes, not that kind with the leafy stuff growing out of it and all of that. You know, it's French fries. That's how they're getting their vegetables. And they're in school, the teachers are being told, be happy if they put ketchup on it because that's tomatoes. You have to get a grip, brethren, on the world you're in. Now, we understand that the devil's broadcast is alive and real, don't we? As the prince of the power of the air, he broadcasts. He tries to get into our lives. We resist him. We learned from Mr. Armstrong that human nature is really Satan's nature. You're going to get rid of human's nature. You've got to cut Satan's broadcast off. You need a different spirit in your mind, and you work against it. Well, look, there's messages out there. They're bombarding people on television and radio and in the printed word. Look at the beer ads. They're so loud, so offensive, so coarse, so rude, so gross. They're taking over television. Do you not think for a minute that that's not happening? Because that's the level at which you reach people today. Everything is loud, coarse, rude, gross, in your face. You know, I have to hit my mute button. I can't get to it fast enough. We're sitting here and we watch Fox News because it's the most conservative, and it's on over there. The TV sits against that wall during the day, and we'll sometimes watch breaking news at lunch. So it's just a thing we want to do here. But we're always hitting the mute button, you know, mute. And then these monster movies come on and all this stuff. Now you got to hit the channel changer to come back. And that's some very conservative station. So you're being bombarded with messages all day trying to break you down and to get you to eat junk. You know, all these pizza ads. It's just white bread and crummy cheese. And, of course, in the world, it's covered with pepperoni and other stuff. Most people don't want green peppers and mushrooms and red peppers and onions and other things that might actually help you live a little longer. They just want the goo. It is astonishing. And as the weak of the world, I watch God's people. Do we somehow think we are less susceptible? We're more susceptible if we are not careful. Patience in the dark. Here's another article. Last year, this would have been 2000, the Institute of Medicine jolted consumers with its report that as many as 98,000 hospital patients each year die strictly from medical errors. medical errors. Oops, we're sorry, we killed the patient. Yeah, Mr. Armstrong's son. Candidly, was killed in the hospital. That's what I read. And, that's the understanding. They injected him with stuff that, I guess, antibiotics. He had a reaction, and staph infection was there, and gave him another one, and whammo, thinking that the staph had flared up, gave him another one. He died. Then there's hundreds of thousands of errors in hospitals where the result is less than death. That's just the number, and that's just America. And, of course, more and more people don't want to work in hospitals. It's too dangerous. So they're understaffed. And so as the number who work there drops, the number of diseases is increasing. At some point, there's an intersection on the graph that you've got an absolute calamity. Now, of course, there is a cycle that human beings get into. And I might just touch on it right here. It's one of the 6 points I was going to mention. But there is a cycle that people get into, and I've watched it. And I will warn you about it. I've seen it over and over again, having been in the hospital with so many people over a 33-and-a-half-year ministry. I've just buried an awful lot of people and seen an awful lot of people who were sick. And what happens is people neglect their health when they're strong enough to do something about it. I feel okay today, and they just neglect it. And what happens is their immune system is quietly imploding. And pretty soon they get something. Now, usually they get over that something, but they may not learn from it. And at some point, they get into the medical drug cycle, which continues to degenerate the body. And now they're on a treadmill, and they can't shake loose of the problem or the side effects from the drug that was taken to get rid of the problem. And there becomes a treadmill, and they never can recover, and it eventually spirals down to death prematurely. It all starts because they weren't prudent. They didn't foresee the evil that could strike them and hide themselves. They didn't understand, as this article said, that you get out of bed in the morning and you simply are ingesting chemicals with every breath and all night besides. That's a fact. That's already working against us. This isn't the world tomorrow. God has not healed the surface of the earth. We are not yet sitting under our own vine and fig tree, brethren of God. You're in this world. We're not of it. We're in it. And physically, we're also of it. Because you can be in the world and not spiritually of it, but if you're in it and you're breathing what other people who don't have God's Spirit are breathing. You're absolutely at the same point in the starting line. I still watch young people when I'm around them, and I've warned now for several years about the stuff that you eat and how bad it is, and I watch our young people at the feast, and they're still pizzaing it. They're still eating all the junk. The tribulation isn't here yet. The disease and epidemics haven't struck me. Well, here now is this terrible flu bug that killed 20 to 40 million. I'm just reading this article again, going over some of the descriptions of the 1918-19 winter flu epidemic that killed a half a million in America. I think I said 18 million in America. It was 1918. I think I said that wrong. It's 20 to 40 million died. Nobody knows how many million actually got the disease, and a half a million died in America. That's what it was. And I don't know if I said it right. People who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. They're doomed to repeat it. It's an incredible article as you go through it. Now, once people get on what I call the sickness cycle, and then the drugs enter, and God's people tend to do it, they tend to, maybe I should just start and try. Because they don't want to go the herbal route. They don't want to practice organic fruits and vegetables and grains and herbs and so forth. Fruits cleanse, vegetables build, grains sustain, and herbs heal. It's great, and I put that in my notes. But how many people changed, even in the Restored Church of God, starting in August or September when I gave those messages, or two parts? You know, you have to change. I've had some very, very serious illnesses in my life, and I'm eternally grateful for them. I guess I'm a better person physically because I had those illnesses. I made certain changes. You know, when you have degenerative rheumatoid arthritis at age 30, and 4 out of 5 people that get arthritis are women, and they get it later than age 30, and you think you're healthy, and you're diagnosed, you realize, wait a minute. And, you know, the doctors tell you right away, nothing you can do about this. I look back and I'm eternally grateful that I got that because it made me start looking at things. Well, look, if you're not dead, it's not too late. But you may be like this 58-pound woman, or, you know, I'm using an extreme here. You have to be careful how you come back. People rushed out of Dachau, and the soldiers, so horrified at what they saw they were so hungry, handed them chocolate bars and killed them on the spot. Dozens and scores of people literally dropped dead. Their bodies couldn't handle it. Now, you know, we don't have anybody in that kind of condition, but you have to very delicately nurse extremely sick people back. Some of God's people need to be wise and careful and work your way back out of a hole you may have dug yourself in for 30, 40, 50, 70 years. You can do it. 7 years from today, there's not a cell in your body that's here in this room. If I've not explained this, you probably heard it. There's not a cell in your body that'll be here in 7 years. If we come back on December 27th, 2010, there isn't a cell in this room, in theory, that'd be here. You'd all be here, but every cell in your body would change over. So you can help it along. It's a fascinating thing that God did. God says fasting is good. The body automatically, when it's fasting, as I think I've explained this, eats dead, damaged, dying, and diseased cells. It always feasts on morbid matter before it starts to eat the other stuff. And that's the beauty of fasting. Most of God's people, I hope, are fasting. Some are not. But I hope you'll think that through. Now, let me read one other point and then go over a few other points in conclusion. Obviously, there's millions of documents on health. There's thousands of books. I don't know how many books we sold in our natural food stores that my parents had. And I've walked through our book section and talked to some of our employees and try to learn. And I've read tons of books. And they're pouring out just like cars down on, you know, out of an assembly plant. And you can't keep up with all of them. There's no way that I can get up here in a few moments, relatively speaking, a few moments, and educate you on all of the things that could be said about health and nutrition. I can just once over lightly and hopefully empower and motivate you. Now, one final thing. Study shows links between antibiotics and allergies and asthma. You have a whole generation of kids with allergies, terrible asthma. I only rarely ever heard of it when I was a kid. Now it's so many people, allergies and asthma. Listen, children who receive antibiotics within their first 6 months of birth increase their risk of developing by age 7 allergies to pets, ragweed, grass, dust mite, and asthma, according to a study conducted by the Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit. However, they are less susceptible to these effects if they live with at least 2 pets, namely dogs or cats, in the first year. Well, I had pets when I was, as soon as I was aware I was around, alive, there were little dogs and stuff in my house. I can remember diving on them and rolling around with my cats and stuff. Dogs, I mean, I was a strange little kid, but I can remember that. My brother would always go bother this Pomeranian we had, and it would always wet on the floor when it saw my brother coming. So my mother got rid of that dog, and we got a little Sheltie at that point. So we had a big collie and a little collie, and, you know, oh, I loved my dogs. I just couldn't get enough of them. Researchers also say breastfeeding in a mother's history of allergies adds to the risks of allergy for a child taking antibiotics. So, you know, even the mothers can pass it on. Well, people take antibiotics not recognizing that there are natural antibiotics. And your body is, you know, anti-bio means anti-life. Your body's supposed to deal with bad bacteria. It has good bacteria in it. When you take antibiotics, it blasts the good and the bad. It's like having a good and a bad army fighting on a battlefield, and the general says, well, my troops are out there, and the other guy's troops are out there, but the other guy's troops are winning, so I don't have any choice. I'm going to just nuke the whole battlefield. and I'm just going to drop this bomb and kill everybody, but at least I'll win. All my soldiers will be dead, but all the other guys' soldiers who are winning will be dead too. That's an antibiotic. It's an atomic bomb. Your body already has conventional, I'm using an analogy, of course, conventional antibiotic weapons. And of course, garlics, onions, leeks, and radishes, I think I mentioned this, are nature's antibiotics. Nature has bromelain and papain and natural anti-inflammatories and certain others. And you can take those. You can learn about them. They're fun to study. But if people only worry about it when they're sick and they're never dealing with the causes and they're always saying, now I need to look into natural stuff because I got some bad effects here, it's too late. It's too late. Antibiotics is a vicious cycle that the whole society is realizing because problems were overprescribed. Now here come the superbugs. They've mutated and the most powerful antibiotics just bounce off of them. Oh, it's serious. The kinds of plagues that are coming, when Christ said pestilence, he didn't say disease, he said pestilence. A better way of translating pestilence is not disease, is plagues. The study's findings are believed to be the first of its kind in the United States that found a link between antibiotics and allergies and asthma in children. Fascinating to see some of these things. 49% of this one study group had received antibiotics in their first 6 months of life. The parents are just pumping them full from the moment they're born. These kids, penicillin's the most common, I guess. All right. Now, obviously, this was sort of a shotgun approach. I always intended that this Bible study would cover certain things in this way, but it was also designed to do some other things, some points, some quick points here at the end. I want to say this again, and I know I said this before in the sermon, but I want to say it again. Educate yourself. If you are not doing that, brethren, you're being very foolish. You would educate yourself against spiritual viruses and bacteria, wouldn't you? You don't want false doctrine to unwittingly, unknowingly, unconsciously enter into you, would you? But why would you then not also educate yourself against the dangers of certain other things you should avoid, which will make you feel good? Educate yourself. Make it a game. Study, learn, examine. Really think about things. All right, recognize you are surrounded. Number two, you are surrounded. Outnumbered, outgunned, outmanned by all the kinds of enemies in the air, soil, food, and water that is trying to, and frankly, in many cases, successfully entering your body. There's junk in the air in this room that Adam and Eve didn't have to worry about. It's just a fact. It's just a fact. You're surrounded. Every single one of us, in a sense, is embattled. Now, you can't get buggy and nuts because you can't fly off to Mars where the air is better. They don't have any air, so all you do is bring air from here and then you'd be stuck with it up there. You're here until Christ comes and rebuilds the surface of the earth. You know all the prophecies in the Wonderful World Tomorrow booklet, or what is my title? It's a little different. I still can't ever differentiate mine from Mr. Armstrong. Anyway, it's about the same. And so you know what's coming, but it's not here yet. It's not here yet. You're surrounded. You're embattled. We're all, in a sense, brethren, we're under siege. I'm not just being melodramatic. What's coming is awful. Millions and millions and millions and hundreds of millions of people are going to die. The hold of that ship was real. Young people today just don't understand. I watch them and they just swill pop. They swill junk. They eat sugar like they were, in a cane field. They don't stop and realize. They think anything green is a fungus. And they do not understand that you're just pouring poison into your body if you don't think about and you're still going to get sick, but you can have a strong immune system, at least within the limits of what the air, land and the soil will produce in terms of course water and food. All right, number three, drink pure water. Give your body a chance to purge the cells, to go in and help the blood expel the poison and carry the good stuff where it's supposed to go and the bad stuff out. The life is in the blood. When God said the life is in the blood, he wasn't kidding. If your blood's in bad shape, you're in bad shape. Oh, I feel good. My blood's bad. No, you're in bad shape. The life is in the blood. That's why God said, don't eat the blood. And he knew that if there's anything bad in any kind of a creature, even clean animals, that's where it'd be. So drink lots of water. Water cools, cleans, and lubricates the body. It cools, it cleans, and it lubricates the body. I hope you're all taking notes and writing these things down. You're not going to remember them. Number two, take walks. If you're not going to exercise in some other particular way, take walks. Just do that. If you can't walk vigorously at first, don't. Just build up. Then walk more vigorously. This complex is getting longer and longer, and every time I have an excuse to cross it, I do. It's not the Baton Death March, but boy, I march. I move. I love it. I love it. Plus, we take walks. Now, I haven't for a little while and I've been so busy, but I started taking walks with my father when I was 6 years old. Come on, Davy, let's take a walk. I remember that. I still remember it like it was yesterday. And we walked with my dog. I was 6 years old. And when my father died and I was 46, we were still taking walks. For 40 years, I walked with him. Every time I ever saw my father, he visited me, I visited him. And, of course, all my life, my brother and sister didn't want to do it. I would walk. Boom. Always. I'd love to do it. Love to do it. And I thank my father for getting me into that habit. I don't know. Did I walk hundreds or thousands of miles? There were times I'd go and just on one walk, on one vacation with him, we'd walk 5, 6, 7, 8 miles in and around the neighborhood and then go back through it again. Oh, unbelievable long walks. Love to do it. He had nature trails. We'd go here. We'd go there. We'd go through parks. We'd do the neighborhoods, you know, everywhere we ever were. If we went on vacation together, which we did in Florida one time, we walked the beach up and down and just walk. It's great. God designs a great, great exercise. I can't swim that much anymore. I don't have time. But I swam 7,000 miles. If you can swim 7,000 miles, try it sometime. 7,000 miles. That's across the Atlantic and back, and then starting back the third time. And I'll just tell you that I'm thankful I did it. It works every muscle group. I wish I had more time. If you like to swim, some people do. Swim. Great. Be careful of jogging. There's certain trauma. Just kind of be careful, particularly your age. Deep breathe, brethren. Mr. Armstrong used to talk about that. The average person works off the top quart of air out of 6 quarts if they're a man, about 5 quarts if they're a woman. Take deep breaths. At night you take deep breaths. I think we talked about that. Take a lot of deep breaths during the day. And when you lay down, you breathe from the diaphragm. Through the day, most people breathe from the top quart of their lungs, and the rest of the lungs are stale. Well, all your blood, your oxygen, comes into your lungs. That's how it gets into the blood. If you're not breathing deeply, you're not oxygenating your blood as well as you could. You want more oxygen in your blood, you're a little dizzy, and so forth. Just practice breathing with the stomach, moving in and out a little more instead of up here. You know, it's a mild form of almost hyperventilating is the way most people breathe when they're relaxing because they've never been taught to breathe. Speakers have to learn to breathe from the stomach, or you just get more and more tense because you don't get enough oxygen that you constrict. So I had to learn. We were taught at Ambassador College the importance of right breathing. The lungs are very important, extremely important to expelling poison. You know, the four eliminators are the bowels, kidneys, lungs, and skin. The top two are not the bowels and kidneys. Most people think they're the only two, and they're not even the top two. The skin is an enormously important eliminator. If you've got a lot of ruptures on your skin is telling you that you're full of poison. There's something going on in there. Take a look. Be careful. Your liver might not be keeping up, and your kidneys, and so forth. But breathe deeply. Practice it. Think about it. It'll also relax you. It's relaxing. You're getting more oxygen. You know, you see people walking around with oxygen. They're taking oxygen. They just carry it around. You know, these Well, you can do that anytime you want just by breathing more deeply, which is better for your heart. It helps your blood. There's that much more oxygen in the blood, then it oxygenates the body, which helps carry the impurities out and the good stuff. The blood's healthier. Just simple. But most people, of course, are never taught that. And, of course, get enough sleep. Not too much, not too little. Too little, you don't have enough time to help the body rid toxins. Which, of course, a lot of that happens through the way you breathe. And your body has to recover from a toxic buildup. Yet, strangely enough, if you oversleep, you will actually create toxins, because certain things that have to be burned will be increased in greater supply. Certain hormones in the body will oversupply, and they will turn toxic if you don't burn them. Too much sleep is bad. Too little sleep is bad. This is basic stuff. Okay, now that's point three. Point four, work at it. Stay the course. This isn't easy. Christianity isn't easy. Nothing in life of any worth is easy, brethren. Stay the course. Work at your health. Don't say, oh boy, I'm inspired to go charging out of here, and by Monday you forgot it all and did very little past Sunday, you see. So work at it. Good things come to those who wait. You may have to wait for better health. You know, if your arteries are plugged up, we're learning. We've seen people. I've seen it many, many times. You know, they can go in and they can perform a bypass. Your arteries are plugged up. Bad pipes. We'll give you new pipes. But you know, you can take certain herbs. You can study, learn, grow, understand, find out, see what the experts say. There are herbs you can take that will kind of herbally chelate your vessels. It'll just open them up. It works. I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to diagnose or prescribe your illnesses, but educate yourself. Go out and find out what thousands and tens and hundreds of thousands of people are finding out. And they're in a world cut off from God, not interested in the laws of God, but everybody wants to feel better. Number five, don't give up. Last point, because I already covered one of the points. I said there were six, but I covered one about the sickness cycle. But point five is don't give up. Remember, human nature wants to give up. Obviously, the adversary wants you to give up. God doesn't want you to give up. Now, if you've been given certain health maladies and that's the hand you've been dealt, play the hand that God has given you. Some of us have to do more long suffering. God wants us to do, in some cases, more suffering to become stronger in that fourth fruit of the Spirit. But not in a lot of cases he doesn't. We bring it on ourselves. Do not give up your battle. Make it a game. Don't make it drudgery, but make it fun. I mean, how many things do you have in your life that are more important to you than your health? Let me tell you, if you're dead, anything else you have in your life isn't going to do you another bit of good. There's no work, nor device, nor whatever, you know, in the grave. Once you're in the grave, won't make any difference what else you were addressing. Your health is important. Many did not discern Christ's body, and they're asleep in Corinth and today. So those are just some basic points. I hope they're helpful. The sermons, frankly, were primarily meant with this Bible study to empower you, not to do it all for you. There's just no possible way. But you can extend your life. Mr. Armstrong worked and worked and worked and worked and worked, and yet lived to be 93 and a half. I was reading an article in preparation for the message back in my office. Studies show that a little bit of stress is actually good. It's only when there's a lot of stress continually where the body doesn't get to recover, it's bad. A little bit of stress is good. Now, it's fascinating. This is what tests have shown, that the body actually responds to stress. People say, I'm under stress. Well, the moment you're born, you're under stress, and doesn't stop till you die. The only way to avoid it is just pull the covers up and never get out of bed. And then there's stress because you think of all the things you should do if you don't get up. All right, suppose that's stressful too. You start tossing and turning like the sluggard in his bed, you know, like a door on the hinges. Remember the proverb? So obviously, stress is all around you. It's a stressful age. Most of our job environments, to some degree, are stressful. But it is interesting that the body was designed to take some of it. We can do it. We can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. You can overcome it by yourself? No. Christ said of his own self he could do nothing. If you've got a big hill to climb, maybe a mountain in terms of your health, well, that's the reality. Admit where you are and start climbing. If it's a molehill or if it's Mount Everest to get back to good health, start now. It won't help to wait. And the taller the mountain, the more the tendency to pull back and not start, and yet the greater the urgency to start right now, you see. So again, I hope these points help, and that concludes the matter. Good night.